Greetings, and welcome to the Unifin fourth quarter 2021 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Sergio Camacho, Chief Executive Officer for Unifin. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Since it's the year-end results, I would like to the audience a message from our President Chairman, Rodrigo Lebois. So, operator, please.
Good morning, and thank you for your assistance. 2021 was a challenging year, full of financial ups and downs that tested businesses in new ways and placed considerable pressure on the economy. This last fiscal year was marked by contrasts. The economic conditions remained difficult across the world for much of the year, with weak growth trajectories limiting the return on investment and output to pre-pandemic trends. Despite the signs of improvement emerging in some sectors of the world economy, the COVID-19 pandemic is still taking its tolls, as resurgence in cases led to the tightening of containment measures, which dented the recovery pace. However, the impact was less severe due to a more targeted approach of specific restraining and fewer stringent supply restrictions. Rebooting investment, expanding access to financial service, and boosted productivity will be key priorities for the economic recovery. As we look to the challenges ahead, the short-term outlook for Mexico points to a moderate economic recovery in 2022, as issues in the global supply chains and uncertainty in the labor market are likely to persist for some time. The OECD forecasts a GDP growth of 3.3% in 2022. Although we acknowledge that the market remains susceptible to the inflation outlook and the economic and geopolitical uncertainties, we are cautiously optimistic. For Mexico, activity has trended up in agriculture, industry, export, and services. The latter displays some heterogeneity with the recovery in high contact sectors such as leisure and hospitality lagging, while activity in some other sectors is above pre-pandemic levels. Despite the tough operating environment and global uncertainty, Unifin delivered a resilient performance thanks to the consolidation of the company's financial position due to access to several sources of funding. We enter 2022 with strong finances, positioning us well to respond to market conditions and capitalize on opportunities. As part of this year's strategies in the first semester, we will pay special attention to our liquidity position, being vigilant of national and foreign debt markets. Our clients value our continuous innovation mindset and count on us to anticipate to their needs so they can lead in their industries. As a result, Unifin accelerates and consolidates its digital platform, Uniclick, placing special emphasis on the digitalization of Unifin. Together with AI-powered insights from our platform, we are delivering a more personalized customer experience and looking forward to offering new products that will reinforce our integral service. This will enable SMEs to invest more, grow, and increase productivity. Sustainability is the core of our future. Our ESG agenda aims to make us more competitive, resilient, and accountable in the way we treat people and the planet. The opportunity to have a positive impact in our environment is a key component of our growth plan. Unifin has recently joined the UN Principles of Responsible Banking. This is the world's largest global banking community that focuses on sustainable finance, sharing best practices, and working together on practical guidance that benefit the entire industry. Unifin wants to take a leadership role in accelerating the fundamental and necessary changes in the economy for current and future generations to achieve shared prosperity. I would like to thank all Unifin staff for their outstanding response to the challenges faced over the past year and their collaboration to deliver exceptional performance. Also, we acknowledge our stakeholders and financial partners for their continued trust and support. I am confident that we are in the right path for a successful recovery, focusing above all on helping our clients achieve their best potential, increasing our market share, and offering new and improved services for a reality that demands a flexible and disruptive vision. Thank you.
Thank you. I hand the floor back to Mr. Camacho.
Thank you very much. And once again, good morning, everyone. Today here with me are Sergio Cancino, our Chief Financial Officer, Mariana Rojo, who recently joined the company as Head of Corporate Finance and Investor Relations, and Ayeli Robles, Head of Economic Analysis and Strategy. After our full year and fourth quarter 2021 results discussion, we will open for our usual Q&A session. In light of the recent volatility and challenges faced by one Mexican non-bank financial institution, I would like to start this presentation by highlighting Unifin's strength and solid financial position. We have a resilient portfolio thanks to our unique combination of prudent origination capabilities and strict lending rules backed by solid assets. We are, of course, in a very different segment to the company in difficulty, as we have no exposure to payroll loans. With our focus on SME leasing and lending, our asset quality continues to improve, as does our return on equity. Given the unjustified but nonetheless concerning contagion to the prices of other Mexican non-bank financial bonds, we are actively seeking additional sources of financing, including accessing local markets, Segures, and sustainable transactions such as Ecobusiness Fund and Proparco. We are also increasing our current balance with the commercial banks in addition to new relationships with other counterparties to diversify our funding sources and mitigate risk in the event that the international bond market remains affected for some time by the current situation. If the bond market remains closed or challenged, we will reinforce our recently adopted strategy of slowing down origination and build up cash levels. Finally, I would like to state that this should be necessary, and just as we did in late 2020, the controlling shareholders are prepared to inject about another $100 million of fresh capital into Unifin to reassure the market, to further strengthen Unifin balance sheet, and to send a message that our controlling shareholders see a tremendous opportunity with the equity and bond trading at current distress levels. Historically, our cash conversion has been weaker at the end of the year. Despite this seasonality, we increased our collections 25% year over year. Therefore, we are pleased with the numbers reported. Moving to our quarterly results, we are satisfied with the fourth quarter and full year results. Originations were up 48.7% during the quarter, and we added more than 800 clients to our portfolio, reaching 9,342 clients by the end of 2021. Unifin commercial strategy was focused on two main objectives during 2021. The first one was targeting our prospecting strategy economy sectors that have high growth potential and low risk. As a result, in the fourth quarter of last year, 80% of new credit was allocated to such industries. This figure has been increasing quarter over quarter, and by 2022, we expect it to be around 85%. The second objective was to diversify the portfolio by segment and asset type. As you can see on the screen, no single sector represents more than 25% of the total originations. Turning to our portfolio, we were able to close the year with our most diversified portfolio in terms of sectors to date, thanks to our continued efforts to target the most resilient sectors with the best conversion rate. The total loan portfolio reached 73.8 billion pesos in the fourth quarter, a 13.4 increase when compared to 61.1 billion pesos in the fourth quarter of 2020, demonstrating a prudent origination strategy focused on key products. I would like to emphasize that this origination strategy is based on our sophisticated risk matrix. Given the current macroeconomic conditions in the coming year, we plan to slow the growth rate of our origination in order to favor cash flow generation. We remain well-diversified across economic sectors and type of assets, with services and manufacturing leading the way respectively. I would like to highlight UniClick's excellent results in last year. Interest income related to UniClick increased 7.7 times compared to 2020. UniClick achieved record originations of 661 million during the period, a 32.7 times increase when compared to the same period of 2020. UniClick represents 1.9% of our total portfolio and 11% of the quarter originations. Asset quality remains in line with expectations. In 2021, we made significant advances in our digitalization process, especially with the launch of UniLease, a multi-asset digital platform with leasing lines for up to 10 million pesos and credit authorizations in just a few minutes. This launch reaffirmed our commitment to be an innovative, digital, and customer-focused company. As we have mentioned before, UniLease follows the successful performance of UniClick. Moving on to asset quality, non-performing loans fell by 30 basis points compared to the fourth quarter of 2020, closing at 4.5%, showing a sequential improvement since the beginning of the pandemic. We expect NPLs to maintain similar levels through the year. We are not expecting further deterioration of our portfolio. On the contrary, we are expecting gradual relief going forward. Collections increased 25.1% when compared to the same period of last year, closing at 5.8 billion pesos, and decreased versus the third quarter of last year due to the seasonality that historically has been weaker due to holidays. We are expecting a gradual recovery in collections throughout the year, mainly due to better economic conditions for this year. The NPL coverage ratio for the fourth quarter closed at 79.4% versus 81% in the fourth quarter of 2020. The loan loss reserve for the fourth quarter was 2,625 million, 3.4% higher than the fourth quarter of 2020. Split by business line, our auto loan factoring and other line increase are 100% covered. Leasing, our largest business line, has a coverage ratio of 79.4%, above our historical recovery value. Total financial liabilities closed at 76.2 billion pesos, an increase of 16.4% compared to 65.5 billion in the fourth quarter of 2020. Average maturity was 49 months, and the total average rate was 10.4%. Our fixed rate financial liabilities fell to 73.6% from 78.3% in the fourth quarter of last year, with floating rates increasing to 26.4% from 21.1% in the same period of 2020. Unsecured loans stood at 77.3%, and secured loans accounted for 22.7% of the total at the end of the quarter. UniFin financial liabilities are split between US dollars and Mexican pesos, 75 and 25 respectively. At the beginning of last year, we approached the international market and issued a new deal for $125 million, of which $127 million were used for liability management exercise via an exchange offer. We also closed credit facilities for an amount of $860 million, achieving our first sustainable credit line with Eco Business Fund. This demonstrates our solid financial position and access to funding to continue helping SMEs reach their full potential. For this year, we continue to seek alternative funding sources. We are engaging in new sustainable link transactions. We have been approached by development banks to extend new loans, receive indications to increase some of our credit lines with commercial banks, and we are tapping local markets, Segures, in the next weeks. In conclusion, we are actively searching new funding facilities to continue strengthening our funding profile and allow us to diversify our debt structure. And again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, should it be necessary, our controlling shareholders are committed to underwrite another capital increase, thereby demonstrating their support to the company. The capitalization ratio stood at 18% in the fourth quarter, a decline versus 21.4% in the fourth quarter of 2020, explained by our share buyback program that was very active during the year. The financial leverage ratio rose to 5.3 times from 4.1 times in the fourth quarter, due to capital decrease and new funding facilities. Interest income increased by 6.2% versus the fourth quarter of 2020 to 2.9 billion pesos, driven by significant growth from UniClick. Leasing represented 71.5% of interest income compared to 74.3% in the fourth quarter of 2020. The portfolio yield stood at 17.5%. A 40-day dip decline when compared to the immediate previous quarter due to the increasing rates during the fourth quarter. The adjusted financial margin for the fourth quarter closed at 847 million pesos, a 35.8% increase compared to the fourth quarter of 2020, explained by a decrease in reserves and cost efficiencies. Interest costs increased 7.9% to 2 billion pesos. NIM remained stable at 5.6% for the quarter, and we expect that this ratio will be gradually increased during the year. OPEX as a percentage of sales remained stable at 13.7% for the quarter and 13.1% for the full year, consistent with the levels reported during the year, driven by a strict control cost policy. Net income for the quarter increased 36.9% versus the same quarter of 2020 to 418 million pesos, driven lower provisions and cost efficiencies. Return on assets increased slightly compared to the third quarter of 2021, explained by portfolio growth during the quarter. Return on equity increased 100 bps when compared to the third quarter of last year, driven by higher net income. In this slide, I would like to introduce you to our sustainability strategy. As you know, this year we have made great strides in sustainability, and with this we reaffirm our commitment to maintain operations aligned with ESG best practices. This strategy is based on five fundamental pillars: corporate governance, profitability, tech inclusion, community strengthening, and climate change. These pillars are based on the contribution to SDG you can see under your screen. This year, we became an official signatory of the United Nations Principles for Responsible Banking, a unique framework for a sustainable banking industry developed through a partnership between banks and financial institutions with banking activities worldwide and the United Nations Environment Program Finance Initiative. Finally, I would like to go over of the same ideas with Unifin framework. First, our primary sustainability purpose will be to support the growth of Mexican SMEs by providing financial solutions for underserved segments. During 2020, we initiated the process to integrate our sustainability vision into our business strategy. In 2021, Unifin became a signatory of the United Nations Global Compact and the Principles for Responsible Banking. We also intend to allocate net proceeds to finance or refinance eligible green and social projects and assets. We have already invested over $400 million towards ESG. Thank you for listening. We would like now to begin our Q&A session.
Thank you. And at this time, we will conduct our question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may press the star key followed by the number 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes from Nicolas Riva with Bank of America. Please state your question.
Thanks very much for taking my question, Sergio. So I have a question which is first kind of a comment, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on this. So I guess the main thing right now, the main focus probably for investors is the gap that you have between your cash position and your short-term debt obligations, right? So you have cash position of $214 million, but you have about $1 billion in short-term debt, right, which is maturing this year. And I know that includes some revolving bank credit lines. You say that in your earnings report, about $360 million. But still, there is a relevant gap between the cash position and short-term debt obligations. And in this environment, clearly, the market is assuming that the Mexican non-bank financials are going to have close to zero, if any, funding for the rest of the year. And I know that you have gotten some new credit lines, as you said in the report, in January, and you're actually looking for more as well. But my question there would be, probably the main source to repay the short-term debt should be the collections on your loan book. And there, you know, looking at the dynamics between loan originations and cash collections, we see that in the fourth quarter, basically, originations were in line with collections. So you didn't really generate any new cash. And my question there would be why you still haven't change that strategy and slowing down on originations to build the cash position ahead of all of these maturities this year? I know that you have said that perhaps going forward you're going to be slowing down originations if needed, and I appreciate the comment about the commitment from the controller to inject another $100 million of equity. But anyway, I wanted to hear your thoughts about this, how you are thinking of meeting all these short-term debt obligations. Thanks.
Hi, Nicolas, and thank you for your questions. First of all, I mean, these results are on the fourth quarter of last year. In the fourth quarter of last year, none of us were aware that what happened with Crédito Real was going to happen. And if you recall, when I said that we want to anticipate our maturity for this year, we made a limited review because we were ready to access the market. And on those days, the recommendation was to wait until January to find or try to get a better conditions on a issuance. The recent events that we have seen on Crédito Real, they basically start to deteriorate this year. Therefore, it's difficult to somehow try to address that situation when we do not have that information at that time. But let me tell you this. For the billion, it's going to be very simple numbers. For the billion short-term maturity that we have or that we present on our financial results, we have already paid $100 million of that. The half of let's say, $900 billion is moving now the balance of that. Of that number, half of it are revolving facilities, which, and this is, I want to make this very clear, except for the international markets, we have not received any doubt or any message for our commercial banks or the developing banks in Mexico or even the local markets that they had some questions on the strength position of Unifin. So all of those revolving facilities, along with the plans or the alternatives that we have for financing and paying those maturities, continue in place except for the international markets. I want to make that very clear. As you can see, through the different bank rates that this competitor or this non-bank financial institution had with dissipation, Unifin has not received any neither a comment or change in the view of with the rating agency. So it's also something very important to highlight. But most important is that we have available lines as of today of close to $350 million. We have a program that should be announced to the market in the short term. We are just waiting for some documentation from the Banking Commission on Cebures, which accounts for another $350 million. We have available or additional or incremental lines for commercial and developing banks for around $100 million. We have to structure finance vehicles that account for $400 million. So in conclusion, we have those available. But most important, I think, is the message that we're sending right now. We start on January 1st or January 2nd with a slowdown in our level of originations. We are prioritizing the cash flow generation, and if necessary, as we said, the board of directors, along with our controlling shareholder, already authorized to look and pursue $100 million of equity injection. I don't know if that somehow explains or clarifies your comment.
Thanks very much for that, Sergio. One follow-up question, I guess, and going back to the comment about the originations and perhaps that if you are not to get some of these incremental funding sources, you would slow down in originations. I guess Crédito Real had the same option, really. We all thought that they could slow down originations, just focus on cash collections, but that didn't happen. And it seemed to be that perhaps the reason for that was that they were doing a lot of refinancing of their clients. And I know that the business model is very different, payroll lending versus leasing for SMEs. In your case, if you were to slow down on originations, would that also hurt your collections? Is there a significant amount of refinancing done for your existing SME clients?
No. No, if you see the quality of our portfolio, and if we get back to the 2020, which, by the way, I think that, I mean, I'm not going to make any judgment about management of the different entities, but this company was very clear and very determined in 2020 when we need to increase equity, there was equity available for us. So there was a very clear message that the commitment of the controlling shareholders and the board of directors and management is 100% with the company. But most important, the quality that you see with our collection levels are with the NPLs, and that's based on our strategy of targeting these strategic sectors that we addressed in the presentation, and go back to after the cancellation of the airport to decide to move and to allocate all of our efforts, commercial efforts, in the supply chain to the U.S. and to Canada, because we knew that was something that this administration was going to be very respectful on the TMEC. And that has proven, if you remember, when we had the COVID situation at its initial stage, we built this plan for support to the SMEs, and now that plan is over, and basically we're collecting 25% more than what we collected in the fourth quarter of 2020. So in that regard, we do not foresee any deterioration on collections, even though our origination levels are reduced.
Thanks very much, Sergio. Appreciate the comments.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Martin Lara with Miranda Global Research. Please state your question.
Hi, good morning. I have two questions. How do you see the portfolio growth and NPLs in each segment this year? And where do you see the portfolio yield during the rest of the year?
Thank you very much, Martin. First of all, when you analyze our different business lines, you're going to see that we are increasing a little bit more what we name like a structure of credit, because the manufacturing of assets for our clients is taking more than expected in terms because of the disruption in supply chain. No, but those credits that we are putting like a bridge loans or so are going to be converted into leasing. On a macro basis, of course, we're seeing a slowdown in the fixed investment in the country, and that of course has an impact on the dynamics on our leasing business, because just as a reminder, the fundamentals of our leasing business have to do with productive assets, basically linked to capex of the SMEs, no, that are our clients. So that of course has a slowdown. The business in which we're seeing more dynamism and it's a very interesting and real bet is Unitech, no, our digital platform that somehow, if you recall, in the previous quarters when we announced that we have this building this platform and also have created our artificial intelligence lab and all the efforts that we put on digitalization, now they are a reality, and a lot of the initiatives that we have in Unitech are now implemented in Unitech. So that is gonna result in an increased productivity going forward. So those are like the main two, I would say, differentiation between the businesses across the company.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Rafa Elias with Bank Trust. Please state your question.
Good morning. Thank you for the call. I understand, and I think everybody does, the differences between Creditorial and Unitech in terms of the different business segments and activities. But I think that it's safe to say that the markets and investors and analysts are wondering about the similarities in terms of the maturity coming up in August, basically because Creditorial had been saying for months that they had a number of different alternatives that would pretty much guarantee that they were going to make the payment of their bond. None of those alternatives ended up being materializing. So, you know, when you say that you have X amount of millions of dollars in credit lines and also, you're giving us a set of alternatives. Are these credit lines committed? Is there a way that you can, at some point during the first quarter or second quarter, have something that has already materialized, that is concrete, where investors can feel comfortable that you actually will have the money to pay the bond?
Hi, Rafa. First of all, I think that the way that Unifin historically has communicated everything to the market has been on facts. I'm putting the alternatives because you're asking me, but I have never made personally saying that we're thinking, we're expecting, we hope, or we plan, no? All of our press releases have been released on facts. In that regard, yes. And actually, one of the reasons why I decided, along with the board of directors, to anticipate our press release was, first of all, to provide certainty to the market, and most important, to start and to activate our share and bond repurchase program, because the fundamentals of Unifin, if we compare Unifin today from perhaps Unifin 2 years ago, are even stronger than what we were at those days. So the plans are there. If I have to say that if we have respected the original date of release of February 17, I may be announcing something there. No, but now since I was I decided to anticipate, I'm saying about the alternatives. I'm not saying about the facts. But trust me that when we decide to announce something, it's going to be based on facts.
So again, are any of the credit lines committed or
the 7.3 billion that we have available is committed. The other alternatives that I mentioned to you are not.
Okay, that's very reassuring. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jamie Nicholson with Credit Suisse. Please state your question.
Hi, thanks so much for the call. And just following up on the questions about your liquidity prioritization and your recent bond repurchases in the market, given that your 22s are trading at a discount, would you be prioritizing repurchasing those in the market in advance of that maturity? I noticed that the $34 million of bond repurchases you've done already, your press release said it was focused on 25s, 28s, and 29. So I'm just wondering, do you plan to continue more bond repurchases, and will you focus on the shorter-dated maturities, including the 22s, and do you expect to continue to repurchase opportunistically? Thanks.
Hi, Jamie. We have an open communication with the stakeholders of the 2022. And since we're confident that we're going to be there for paying, I believe that it will not be fair to repurchase those at these levels because we have an excellent communication and an excellent relationship with those stakeholders. Therefore, we have been focused more on the long side of the curve in which the discounts are greater. And of course, we are also seeing that as something to make a profit, no? By the way, when we decide to start repurchasing, trust me that it has not been easy to capture more volume on those, no? So I believe that the people who is involved in the fundamentals of Unifin is not willing to sell a bond that does not have the fundamentals to be trading at 65 or 60 or whatever. No, so now we have been focused on the long part of the curve.
And so I'm sorry, I couldn't hear all that well. So in terms of continuing potential repurchases in the market, do you expect to continue to do that opportunistically? And then also, what is the
yes?
Okay. And then what is the average cost of some of these new facilities? You said that you've been able to refinance and you haven't had any trouble, but has the cost of that financing gone up, and what's your kind of average cost of the new facilities you've gotten? Thanks.
Actually, Jenny, thank you very much for that question, because that opened me the room for a further explanation. The reason why this company focused on issuing international debt has to do with the maturity that I can get in international markets, which are like 8 years, long 8 years, 9 years. Because in my view, as a prudent risk management approach, I have always tend to favor the gap between my liabilities and my portfolio. But of course, that is more expensive when I compare it to issuing in locally, no? Just to give you an idea, if our bonds were trading at par, I will get a rate around 9% or so in dollars. So when I do the full cross-currency swap, I may be getting a rate of 12.5 in pesos. The levels that we are seeing for our local issuances are around 7% in pesos. So on that, I'm going to get a benefit, of course, in the cost of funding. I'm going to reduce the weighted average of my liabilities, but immediately I'm going to get better rates. And the same happens also with the commercial facilities that I have in pesos. The rates here are lower.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sam Epibunya with Wellington Management. Please state your question.
Good morning, Sergio and team. Thank you for doing the call. As you can imagine, most of the conversation is around liquidity. I don't know if you can comment post, you know, the $30 million of repurchase that you've done, where you are in terms of cash position, and what's the expectation. That's question number one, and number two will be on the sort of cash flow. And I think there was a question earlier about slowing down origination to sort of generate more cash. My question is, why have you not done it, you know, in the fourth quarter, when a few of us have sort of asked for at least more prudent sort of loan growth? And what's the plan going forward? And then if I can tackle a last one, would be if you can remind us what the possibilities are, because you went too fast on the option. I just noted the $350 million of credit facility that apparently committed so far, but it'd be great if you can run down the rest of it. Thank you.
Hi, Sam. It's not that we do not take into consideration some comments that I received from you guys in terms of slowing down the origination. Once again, on those dates, we were very close to tap the market. As I said, we have this limited review on our numbers as of the third quarter, and it's going to be very, very difficult to provide with explanation something that happened that at those days we were not expecting to happen. What I can tell you, again, is that our level of cash continues to be very, very strong in that regard. That's why we have been repurchasing bonds. Trust me that if I was concerned about how to roll over our maturity that we had in August, I will not be buying bonds. No, I will be making additional cash for paying that. So the company continues to be very close to everything that is going on. But once again, the only market in which we may not have access for funding is international markets. The rest of my commercial and banking relationships, along with the development banks, along with the local markets, are there. And I can tell you, for example, that for our program of $350 million, we have already the commitment or the interest or the approval of these pension funds and insurance companies that are going to be the takers of that paper of half of it as we speak.
So, Sergio, you mind, I mean, just quickly again, so when you hypothetically, how you think about that short-term debt as we said, like $1 billion, there's about 200 of that bond that's due in August, but you have $757 million or 15.5 billion peso with like bank partners. So just how you think about kind of addressing those, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Of that billion that you see on our financial statements, we have already paid $100 million. So the balance of 900, it's half of it are revolving facilities, and the other half, let's say 450 million, are these 200 million of the bond that matures on August, and the rest are amortizations that we need to do to some facilities. On that, we have available facilities as we speak for around $350 million. We also have the plan of these certificado bursátiles that accounts for another 350. We have banking and developing lines of another 100 million. We have two structure facilities that we're working as we speak with lawyers and everything for another $400 million. So, I mean, the alternatives and the options are there. We have actually, with our talks that we have had recently with some of our commercial bank partners, they have already, at their internal committees and risk committees, separated the names of Unifin and the rest of the non-bank financial institutions, just because of the fundamentals.
No, sorry, Sergio, I just want to make sure I get this right. So you say you already paid $100 million of that $1 billion. So 900 million debt. You say you have 350 million committed in terms of those facility, and then you mentioned another 350 million, and I wasn't sure what it was. Sorry.
That's a public issuance in the local market.
Okay. And you need authorization for that, right? Have you gotten it yet?
Yeah. We have the authorization, let me put it this way. That's why we have been able to be on roadshow with these insurance companies, pension funds, and so forth, so on.
Okay, and then, sorry, and the rest, you said DFI, I imagine those are the local development banks in Mexico, you say maybe $100 million, and then maybe a structure note program of $400 million, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, and then, sorry, on the cash flow question, I mean, how do you think about this, right? How to generate, and I think it goes back to that first question from the Q&A. Like, on an illustrative purpose, I mean, if you slow down origination, would you be able to generate cash?
Yes, actually we have, and the reason why you see this improvement in collections year-over-year, or let's say through the year sequentially, the second to the third quarter, is because we have done significant improvements in the management of our collections department. So we are more active, more proactive in terms of collections. And of course, the quality of the portfolio plays an important role here. We have and we originate on these strategic sectors that actually recover fast when the COVID starts to release a little bit. Let's say the first wave of COVID starts to release a little bit, we have clients who recover very fast because they were in these strategic sectors. And that's why we have these our economic studies department to be very, very strategic in the way that we want to originate.
All right, thank you, sir.
Our next question comes from Jao Rosado with Financia. Please state your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I just have the first question on the coverage ratio. I just wanted to understand with, you know, rates going up, including in Mexico, should we expect, you know, more defaults in the portfolio compared to 2021? And if so, do you expect to increase the coverage ratio that I think currently is now 79% to higher up, something above 100%? What's the plan there?
Hi, Joel. No, particularly our leasing business, it's on a fixed rate. I mean, it's a fixed rent. That is not going to change despite the rate out there. So we're not expecting a deterioration on that front. What was the second part of the question, sorry?
The second part is in terms of the coverage ratio, because even though the you have mostly fixed rates, when you refinance or even new loans, you know, with higher rates, probability of default for any given issue or everything else constant is still higher. So the business in itself should have a higher coverage ratio to protect against potential defaults.
You mean for our clients, right?
Yes.
Well, I don't think that the rate hike is going to be as significant to put in jeopardy the continuity of our clients. And I'm talking about the vast majority of our clients. Because it has been gradual, and basically everybody is expecting that those hikes. Our department says that they're expecting 50 bits this new meeting. So I mean, it's like something that everybody has visibility on. No? So we do not expect, and of course, all of our credit scorecards and everything that we put in place to provide or to go forward with a client are not so tight. I mean, we have a coverage ratio on the payment of the rent, if it's the leasing or in the different other products, that, of course, is not material when you see or you expect those rate hikes.
Okay. The next question I had was just regarding the new lines of funding you're signing. I just wanted to make sure I fully understood just in terms of recent transactions, because I think it was at the end of January you announced 150 million of new commitments, and then with the financial results now, you announced a new 65 million line. So I just wanted to make sure there's no overlap there. So you
there is no overlap. No.
Okay, so 150 plus 65.
That's correct. Yeah, there is no overlap.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Chelsea Colon with Aegon. Please state your question.
Hi, and thank you for taking the questions. I just have a few. You mentioned that you paid down $100 million of debt already. Did you use your new lines that you recently announced to pay down that $100 million, or was there another source?
No, what's another source? Was cash generation. One of the reasons why our collections somehow look or are lower when compared to the third quarter of last year is because there were some deferral of payments due to the holidays. So we received that cash at the beginning of the year, and that's the cash that we used to partially pay the $100 million.
Okay, got it. I mean, I guess that makes sense with the holidays practically speaking, but in past years it doesn't look like collections went down in the fourth quarter compared to the third. So would you say that this past quarter was
No, I will say that it's very difficult to have the 2020 as a year of that we can use as comparison, because we have the COVID plan in place and we have so many other things going out there. So, but if you see, let's say, on past years, that was the trend.
Okay, got it. And just one clarification regarding the originations in the quarter. Is the amount that you present, I think it's 5.9 billion or so, is that including or excluding the down payment that you request of your customers?
No, it does not include the down payment. No, of course not.
Okay, got it. So then, I know in the past you gave a whole breakdown of the originations by segment and the historical originations. I think that part might be missing from the press release this time.
Yeah, and I apologize for on that, Chelsea, because since we anticipate everything, we have one week and a half less. But we favor the opportunistic information, but of course you're going to receive that details in a few days.
Okay, great, understood. And then just a couple more quick ones, if I may. Just beyond the leasing part of the portfolio, can you clarify how much of the loan portfolio is secured by assets?
Sure. Just give me one sec. Around 30%.
So 30% of the remaining, what is it, roughly 30% that's not leasing is also secured?
What? Let me clarify. What do you mean by secure? Like, if it has additional guarantees?
Is any of the non-leasing portfolio secured by assets?
Yes.
So is that the 30%, or does that 30% include guarantees only?
The structure that we have on the different businesses, they always have, in addition to the contract, the guarantee of the owner of the company in terms of a promissory note. No? So they validate or they have those collateral guarantees on those businesses.
Okay. Of the non-leasing portfolio, how much is secured by, like, actual hard assets? I guess that's my main question.
I would say around 50% at least.
50?
50, yes.
Okay. Thank you. And just my final question, if I may. I noticed that your cash balance did go up a bit quarter over quarter, but your total current assets did not go up. The line item other current assets actually went down sequentially. So I'm just wondering what's included in that line item, the other current assets. Like, why would that go down quarter over quarter?
Give me one sec. Basically, on other current assets, you're going to see the deferred taxes, and that's basically the main line that changed. But I'm going to ask the team to send you a compilation of that so you can have the full information on that.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Juan Ponce with Bradesco. Please state your question.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. You mentioned earlier that fixed investments are slowing and affecting the leasing business. I just want to know how much of that impact do you think is coming from the uncertainty around electricity bill? I mean, and if you see clients becoming more reluctant to invest due to this overhang, that would be great just to hear your comments on that. Thanks.
I mean, yes. I mean, it's a macro issue. All of this noise related to let's say the controversial electricity bill and other decisions that the government has taken, of course, have deteriorated the mood for investing in the country. However, that's what we are targeting, these sectors that no matter what these bills are, have a higher level of dynamism for the respective businesses. But yes, I mean, that's what the innate number can say, no, about the confidence and many other indicators out there.
Right, right. Can you remind me what are the sectors, the ones that you're targeting, please?
Yes. As you can see on your screen, you're going to see that transportation and logistics is one of the third sectors that we target, along with services, manufacturing, basically on the supply chain to the U.S., utilities as well, telecom, and mining, oil and gas. Mining, oil and gas, no, but infrastructure and everything. We are not so optimistic on that. Those are the regulations that we have on sector. I will say that for going forward, we will focus more on transportation, manufacturing, telecom, and agro industry, and healthcare a little bit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Natalia Corfield with JP Morgan. Please state your question.
Hi, Sergio. Thank you for taking my question. You mentioned this possible $100 million in capital injection, if necessary. So my first question to you is, what do you mean by necessary? What would it take for you to inject this $100 million?
I think that it will have to be a combination of our talks with the rating agencies. How do you see or perceive the risk of the company? Also, it will have to do with the all of these available facilities that I have mentioned during the call, and how do they evolve? So I would say that it's just a message in the sense that the willingness to do it is necessary. But at this point, we do not feel that we need to do that.
Right. And do you already have the money, or is it like the previous one that you have to raise with other investors?
No, it will be in the format of a rights offering, basically the same that we did on 2020. And of that, I would say that we have half of that money now, because one, our chairman of the board and controlling shareholder has half of the company at least. So on that, I would say that we have half of it.
All right. Just a comment that I think now is for me the time for this capital injection. Like, this will really boost confidence on the company, and I think that's all that Unifin needs right now, more than having those credit lines. This probably should have been what Credit Hell should have done. But also moving on from that, on the topic of slowing down origination, what level of collection in excess of origination do you think you show for us in the first quarter of 2022?
I think that we are targeting to have an increase in the year of around 20% more collections.
Okay, 20% more.
Yes.
And a curiosity that I have, when you did these buybacks of bonds, do you cancel those bonds, or are you still subject to the volatility of those bonds in your results?
No, we're buying those bonds, and those bonds are going to be canceled.
Okay, fantastic. And perhaps a last question. Your ability to take debt, secured debt, do you have a limit for secured debt based on covenants?
Yes, I don't have that analysis right here. We certainly, I'm going to ask the team to send it to you, but yes, we still have room for that.
All right. If you could provide the number, that would be very helpful.
Sure.
Doesn't need to be now, but perhaps in a press release, that would be very helpful for us.
Okay, sure.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ernesto Rizek with Altio Capital. Please state your question.
Thank you for the presentation. I wanted to ask, when will the shareholder capital injection take place if it does? And my second question was, you mentioned good relationship with local funding counterparts, but on page 11 of your earnings report, we can see that most of your 2022 maturities are with international counterparts. Are you already in discussion to refinance those? Can you comment on the status, please?
Sure. Yes, we started talks with the I would say with all of our counterparties on the short term debt last month. So once again, we do not see at this point of time any risk of not having those facilities revolved.
All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays. Please state your question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. I had a follow-up on the election matter. I was looking at your traffic for quarter of 2019. You mentioned that the collections for that quarter were fairly stable for the third quarter, so that would be...
I'm sorry, Gilberto, your line is falling or is breaking.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Sorry about that. So I was looking at your transcript for the fourth quarter of 2019, and you mentioned then that originations were also stable compared to the third quarter. So that would be 2 years without this very marked seasonal effect. And also, if I look at the sequential increase from the third quarter of 21 to the fourth quarter, we don't really see a significant increase in the level of the early NPLs and NPLs, which I guess is a good thing. But then what happened with this 600 and some million pesos that you did not collect compared to the third quarter? Where are we talking about, you know, clients that paid less than or not late, but they are paying at the very end of their period? Can you help us understand?
Yes, sure. No, what you said is correct. I mean, there were some clients that they were not here. Actually, they were not here in their offices. I mean, when you see the nature or the structure of many of our clients, the owner plays a role as the CEO, as the CFO, as the treasurer. Now he's the only guy who has the banking or the checking account. So in many of the cases, they just defer a few days their payment, and they paid in the first days of January.
Okay. But I mean, in that case, they wouldn't be in arrears with you. They are still on time?
Yes.
Okay. And another follow-up on the matter of the potential capital raise. Two quick clarifications. Is your controlling shareholder ready or prepared to contribute $100 million by himself, or half of that since he owns
half of that.
Okay. And is it too early to think about at what price per share would that be?
It's too early. I mean, it's too early then to make some conjectures that on the timing of that capital injection. I mean, the reason why I'm mentioning this is it's like an ultimate alternative. Once again, despite international markets, the company has not received any comments or any change in their relationship with commercial and development banks, with the local issuance of the local market, or other sources or funding, such as the one that we have with Proparco.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Justin Ziegler with Eaton Vance. Please state your question.
Thank you for the call. Going back to an earlier question, just to clarify, so of the cash collections you're pulling in Q1, how much of that total amount is being retained and how much is actually going out into originations?
Half and half.
Half and half. Okay, thanks. And then just real quick, just so I understand, what is the process of actually the cash coming from the customer to your balance sheet? I mean, it seems like a crazy simple question, but one of the things that I think has been upsetting is, you know, some of the accounting going on at some other peers, it's not clear how that cash goes from the customer to your balance sheet right away. Are there middle parties that take care of that, or do you guys do it yourselves, or do you outsource the collection? How does that get done?
In the market securitization or product securitization, there's a trust who made the collections. Mm-hmm. In the portfolio that is not within those structures, we collect. And that will be for leasing. For the rest of the business, we collect directly.
Okay. So if you had a collector, how much direct collection then is from the customer from you guys?
Just give me 1 sec. Quanto person is around 20% is collected through this trust, and 80% is collected directly.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Nick Dimitrov with Morgan Stanley. Please state your question.
Hi, Sergio. I've got a couple of questions. I remember from our discussions last year, you were saying that your net interest margin will start recovering in the fourth quarter. And as per my calculations, the margin continues to erode roughly 40 basis points quarter over quarter. So it's down to like 5.3, 5.4 from the high fives a year ago. And I was wondering, when are we going to see stabilization on that front and possible expansion? And if you decide to curb your origination, considering the fact that rates went up in Mexico and you have to conserve liquidity, is it even realistic to see that margin expand anytime soon?
I think it is realistic, Nick, because two things. First of all, because as I said, all the initiatives that we have in our digital platform, basically, the cost of acquisition of a client, the cost of acquisition of a client at UniClick is 8.3 times lower than a cost of acquisition of a client at Unity. So once that we have in full implementation those efforts, we're going to see an increase in profitability. So yes, I mean, I feel comfortable saying that you're going to see that stabilization first or the second quarter of this year. Because as I said, if we switch the funding structure of the company for issuing more local, we're gonna have a benefit there.
Okay, so the second or the third quarter of 2022. Okay,
yes.
So we're pushing the okay. Talking about curbing origination, is there a part of your product offering that you're going to curb first? What I'm trying to kind of figure out here is that UniClick is obviously growing fast, and I see the appeal of the cheaper origination. At the same time, a lot of it is unsecured, right? So it's kind of changing the overall mix of your business. If you have to curb origination, what are you going to curb first, the leasing part of your origination or UniClick?
No, none of those. I will say that we are cutting, as we speak, first, working capital facilities that we have with our clients. Remember that for clients who have been very good payers with excellent track records, we sometimes open working capital facilities. And so those are the ones who are being cut as we speak. We also may not be so aggressive in our factoring business. But UniClick is not going to stop just because and it's something that we have not addressed on the call, but I mean, UniClick now, who it's a reality, it's in the process, we're not going to be in the process of trying to separate them, because they are going to be capable of getting a standalone valuation which if it's if we are successful in that, the company is going to have an incremental equity injection just because of the valuation. On purpose, I have not commented this to the upper market because that's another thing that is going to be gravy. First of all, I'm explaining and going through the different explanations and concerns on a standalone basis of Unifin, but Unifin is a reality. There are some analysts out there who are already putting valuations into that business.
Okay, I see. And finally, on capital. So capital continues to get eroded. Leverage mm-hmm. continues to trend upwards. What is the plan for the share buyback program, right? I mean, this sends a really bad signal to bondholders when, I know you talked about the fact that your relationships with the local banks and the development banks and whatever, you know, have not been impacted yet. But the reality is your bonds are trading in the 60s, right? So are you going to continue to, you know, buy some of your shares back? When I looked at your equity, right, and your equity was kind of flattish to marginally down, and one of the explanations was that, you know, the share buyback program was behind it. Are you going to continue to buy your stock back? And by the way, I do agree with Natalia Corfield that, you know, if you're going to be putting capital, you might as well do it now rather than, you know, get too cheeky and you know, Credit Real was kind of playing the whole game, and in the end, you know, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you saw what happened yesterday. So, sorry, I've kind of threw out a lot of things at you.
No, I perfectly understand. I mean, for the different talks that I have had with your colleagues or some other stakeholders, I perfectly understand the frustration that you have. No, but trust me, that there is no one more frustrated about this situation than me. I'm in the need of providing with additional explanations on the business just based for something that I did not dig, no, or not was my decision or my bad management, the thing that led to the situation that we are facing right now. Yes, I will say that this, I mean, for the upcoming days, of course, the prioritization in our share buyback program is going to be to do bond buyback program. No? No, we're aware of that.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Guillermo Diego with Santander. Please state your question.
Sergio. Thank you for the call. Maybe the question is, now you have the equity trading at 90% the book value, so practically discounting, no? Obviously, you are not paying for growth, and you're practically discounting a hit of $1.2 billion. And with the bonds, no, trading 66, 70s, the discount is worse, no? So maybe... can you clarify us, no? Since 1993, since the company was founded, how many write-offs have you had in the whole history, in million pesos? Because it seems, no, like the market tends to compare you to another payroll lenders with a higher active rate that didn't make sense, no, at least with comparing with peers, and that has had many write-offs with more poor profitability. So in your case, no, where your business is leasing and you have the collateral, and as you said, the non-leasing part has 50% collateral, etc. How many write-offs in million pesos have you had in the history of the company?
Well, hi, Guillermo. Yeah, I mean, I fully agree with you. I think that the fundamentals of the company are totally different from these guys in question, no? All of our leasing business have an asset who basically collateralize at 100% the value of the contract, in addition to additional guarantees that we have with some clients. So yes, for us, the fundamentals are totally different, but it is what it is, no? We need to deal with this situation. I would say that a rough number from since the company was founded in terms of write-offs, it will be around 750 million pesos in the 29 years of history of the company. So it's basically nothing, no, when compared to everything that we have originated. And it's just
about 30 years you have had. So in 30 years you have had marginal rights, no?
That's
either
right.
You
sell
the
right.
Asset, you get the collateral, etc.
And we also have the legal depository figure. You need to remember that on every listing we have the legal depository figure who made the owner of the company or the CEO responsible for returning the asset. And if he does not do that, he enters in a criminal offense that we can take him to jail. But sorry, yeah.
And the second question is, in the 12 months rolling, no, we have seen you have taken out 18 million shares, 3% of the company in buybacks, which seems like very good, but liquidity tends to be thin, no? Not just for anything in general, small and mid caps in LATAM and Mexico. The question is for the bonds, no, and for the equity, when you decide which is more attractive, at least for operational purposes, no, you have to exclude the perpetual, and it seems like buying back your shares gives you 17-18% implicit return. Buying back your bonds, obviously, no, at these prices, it seems also competitive. So how do you balance those parts? What is more attractive?
I think that due to the current situation, we prioritize, and I'm talking about what we have done in the recent days, the bond buyback. And we believe that it's our responsibility to provide a clear message of support and on fundamentals to all the firms that trust in our business model, and they were willing to write a book now for when we did our issuances. So that's a way that we can send a clear message that we are very comfortable about the fundamentals of the company. So to be very, very honest and very candid with you, over the last days, I have focused more on 100% on the bond repurchases.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Sergio.
Gracias.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David LaPierre with Loomis Sales. Please state your question.
Hi. Thanks for the call, and thank you for moving up the call time and your comments today. Just two quick ones. Wondering if you have had any conversations with rating agencies lately, maybe around leverage or anything like that. And then also on some of your funding options, are any of the facilities you're working on, there are some development banks involved. Are those local or international? Could you just clarify there?
Yeah, they are more local. Basically, the bulk of the development banks is local. And of course, when I start to see the things with Crédito Real, I proactively decide to approach the rating agencies to see their views and to see their thoughts on everything that is going on in the market. And of course, both of them we're very clear in the sense that we have different fundamentals, and that's it. That's what I can comment to you on that regard. No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's all the questions we have for today. I'll now turn the floor back over to Mr. Sergio Camacho for closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much for the call. As we said, we decided to anticipate the release of our numbers to provide visibility, clarity, and to somehow provide tranquility to the market. The team is going to be available for any further questions you may have. Thank you very much, and thanks.
Thank you. That concludes today's call. All parties may disconnect. Have a great day.